Good afternoon, everyone. So since today is Rosh Chodesh Av, the beginning of the 9 days, I thought we would discuss the topic of Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha. The Mishnah in Tainis and Avchav Vav Amid Beis establishes that Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha, from the time that Av arrives, we are Mimatin Besimcha. We'll discuss exactly what that means. And the Gemara in Avchav Tes elaborates in the name of Rav that Kishem Shemishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha, Kach Mishanichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha, just as we decrease the Simcha in Av, we increase Simcha in Adar. Based on this principle, Rav Papa concludes that one should refrain from any court dispute with a non-Jew during the month of Av, because Rea Mazale, because his fate is poor. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tanius, Perikei Alach Avav, he codifies the idea of Mishu Yikonis Av Mimatin Besimcha, and likewise the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph Siv Beis also records the idea of Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha, and notes the different ramifications of this principle. So I'd like to focus on the following three questions during our Chaburah today. The first is, what exactly are the parameters of Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha? What's the Mechayiv of the Mimatin Besimcha? What exactly does Mimatin Besimcha mean? Number two is, what type of Simcha is included in this principle of Mishanechnas Av Mimatin Besimcha? What type of Simcha is it that we have to decrease? And number three, what lies behind the parallel between the Miut of Simcha in Av and the Ribui of Simcha in Adar? Why is it that the Gemara links these two together? So let's begin from our first question, which is, what exactly is the meaning of Mimatin Besimcha when we say Mishanechnas Av Mimatin Besimcha? So, in terms of background here, it's important to note two different Gemaras. The first is the Mishnah in Tainis and Av Yud Beis Amid Beis, which says that once a series of fasts for rain has been observed, and rain has not yet fallen, so then we are Mimatin B'masa Uvimatan B'binyin Uvinetia Be'irusin Uvinisuin. We decrease in business activity, in construction, in planting, engagement, and marriage. And Tosos and Megillah, Daf Hei Amid Beis, explains that when the Mishnah here says Mimatin, what it really means to say is not only that we should decrease the amount of simcha, but that we should eliminate the simcha entirely, that there should be no simcha whatsoever. So that's the first source to note. The second is the Gemara Nivamos, and Daf Mem Gimel Amen Aleph, which says that from Rosh Chodesh Av, the nation would be mematin be'iskehem milisa umilitein melivnos vilintawa. They would decrease their business activity, and they would not engage in as much construction and planting. And Tosos there, Yevamos Mem Gimel, comments that what's prohibited is specifically ribui masa umatan. But business activity that's related to tzorche hachupa, that's related to making a wedding, that would be permitted. So what you see from Tosos is that really what Mimatin Besimcha means is that you have to lessen the amount of Simcha that you have, but it doesn't mean that you can't have any Simcha, because Tzorche HaChupa is obviously for the purpose of Simcha, it's for the purpose of a marriage. And nonetheless, business activity for the Tzorche HaChupa would be permitted, as long as one generally decreases the amount of Masa Umatan in which he engages. So from these two sources, we have two different opinions that emerge in the poskim. The first is the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Aleph, and he infers, based on the Tosos in Megillah, that when we say Mishanichnas Av Ma'atin Besimcha, it means that we shouldn't have any Simcha at all. After all, when the Mishnah in Tainis said that after a series of fasts were Mima'atin B'Masa Uvimatan V'chule, it also meant that we shouldn't have any simcha whatsoever. So says Tosfos, says the Magen Avraham, that based on that Tosfos, that Mimatin means not to have any simcha whatsoever, so then so too, when the Gemara says, Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha, what it means to say is that we shouldn't have any simcha at all. So that's the opinion of the Magen Avraham. However, the Shaar HaTzion, in some Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, Sif Aleph, so he infers, based on the Tosos in Yevamos and Daf Mem Gimel, a different position, and he says that according to that Tosos, really what would be the case is that Mishanichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha doesn't mean not to have any simcha at all, but rather it means to have less simcha than usual, based on the argument that we spelled out before. Because Tosfos says that that business activity for the purpose of tzorche hachupa, for the wedding, would be permitted, even though, of course, that is simcha oriented. So clearly, Tosfos assumes that Simcha per se is not prohibited. It's not, there's no formal prohibition against Simcha, but rather there has to be a decrease in the amount of Simcha. That's really what the requirement of Mishenichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha is. So what exactly is the Nekudas HaMachlokas between these two positions of the Magen Avraham, that there should be no Simcha whatsoever, and Tosos Sinivamos Mem Gimel, according to the Shaar HaTzion, that there should be less Simcha than usual? So I thought that we could explain this Machlokas based on an idea of the Rav, and I saw this idea in the Sefer HaRei Kedem, page Reish Pei Gimel to Reish Pei Dalet, where the Rav explained this idea of having less Simcha than usual. Because after all, what does that mean to have less than usual? Either something should be mutter or it's aser. Either the simcha is permitted or it's prohibited. What does it mean to have a decrease in the amount of simcha? So the Rav explained that this idea of having less than usual is a kiyum of avelus belief. So the idea is that when Av comes, when Av arrives, Mishenichnas Av, we have to start to feel the experience of the avelus of Tisha B'Av. We have to start having that subjective feeling of the avelus of Tisha B'Av. And at this point, there isn't a formal prohibition against Simcha. However, because we're supposed to start having that experience, so therefore we have to decrease the amount of Simcha. We have to have less Simcha than usual in order to facilitate that avelus belief. However, if according to the Magen Avraham, that there shouldn't be any simcha at all, so what we might explain is that no, really this follows the classic approach, which is that either something is mutter or aser, and if simcha is aser, so that means that there's a formal prohibition against simcha from the beginning of Chodesh Av. So the Rav explains that while the formal prohibition of Simcha and these the other formal prohibitions would be triggered during specifically Shavua Shachol Bo, from the beginning of Chodesh Av, from Rosh Chodesh Av, there's only a kiyum of Avelos belief, but the formal prohibition of Simcha is not yet on the books. So what emerges from this from the Rav's idea is that we have a subjective kiyum of Avelos belief from the time that Rosh Chodesh arrives, and perhaps there are additional expressions of this kiyum belief. In that piece, the Rav is quoted as saying that the minhag not to eat basar v'yayin may also be an expression of the kiyum of avelus belief. However, as we said before, there's clearly a distinction between Rosh Chodesh Av and Shavua Shachol Bo, where Rosh Chodesh Av would be the time period for the kiyum of avelus belief, whereas Shavua Shachol Bo would be the time period for a formal prohibition, and that the Rav explained that would also shed light on another distinction of the Rama in Simin Taf Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Yud, where the Rama explains that from Rosh Chodesh until Shavua Shachol Bo, so when you have a Sudas Mitzvah, then anybody who is Shaykh to that Sudas Mitzvah can partake in it. However, during Shavua Shachol Bo itself, only a minyan mitzumtzum should partake in the Sudas Mitzvah. We're more restrictive about who is allowed to partake in the Sudas Mitzvah. So how exactly do we explain this distinction? That from Rosh Chodesh until Shavua Shachol Bo, we have a more expansive heter, and during Shavua Shachol Bo, we have a more restrictive exception. So the Rav explained that it follows this exact approach. From Rosh Chodesh until Shavua Shachol Bo, that's a kiyum of Avelos belief. That's a subjective experience. So there we can be more lenient in terms of who is allowed to take advantage of an exception. We can extend that to anybody who is shayach to a Sudas Mitzvah. But during Shavua Shachol Bo, we have a formal prohibition on the books. So there, we're going to have to be more stringent in terms of our exception and limit it to a minyan mitzumtzum. So what emerges from this analysis is that when we talk about the mechayiv of Mima'atin B'Simcha, we have two different approaches. Maybe it's a formal prohibition, and if that's the case, so then there shouldn't be any exceptions, and that's the Magen Avraham, that there should be no Simcha whatsoever. Or maybe the mechayiv is not really a formal prohibition of engagement in Minei Simcha and activities of Simcha, but rather to have an Avelos belief, to have a subjective experience of the Avelos of Tisha B'Av already from Rosh Chodesh Av. And if that's the case, then we can explain the position that Mima'atin B'Simcha doesn't mean to eliminate Simcha entirely, but rather means to have less Simcha than usual. So now let's move over to our second question, which is what exactly is the type of simcha that is included in the principle of Mishenichnas Av, Mima'atin B'Simcha? So the Rama in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Beis, he notes that there's an exception to the rule, which is that any simcha that is litzorech mitzvah is prohibited. If you have a simcha that's litzorech mitzvah, so then that doesn't fall under the category of mishenichnasav mematin besimcha. The question then becomes, why is it that nisuin is prohibited? Why is marriage prohibited? After all, nisuin is litzorech mitzvah. So if litzorech mitzvah is permitted, then why is nisuin prohibited? So here, the Magen Avraham and the Mishneh Berurah and Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, and this really already stems from the Beis Yosef, so they explain that the reason is because lo misamna milsa. Really, it's litzorech mitzvah. However, since this is not such a good time period, one shouldn't get married during it. It's not a good time to get married during the 9 days. The Rav, though, explained that we could take a different approach to this question of why Nisuin is prohibited, even though Simcha Letzorech Mitzvah is permitted. So, in order to explain his approach, let's begin like this. Why is it that Simcha Letzorech Mitzvah is permitted? So, the Rav explained that when you have Simcha Letzorech Mitzvah, so the Simcha is really kind of Derech Agav. The Tzorech Mitzvah is the Iker. If you're really doing the activity for the purpose of the mitzvah, and the simcha just comes, it accompanies the mitzvah, it comes on the side. Whereas when you have simcha ba'alma, when you have an activity that's really just all that it is an activity of simcha, so then simcha stands at the core. Simcha is the ikar. So that's why simcha ba'alma is prohibited, but litzorech mitzvah it's going to be permitted because there the simcha is more derech agav. However, explained the Rav, when it comes to nisuin, so simcha is definitional to nisuin. Simcha lies at the essence of the mitzvah of nisuin. And therefore, we cannot describe simcha as derech agav to nisuin, but rather, since it's definitional and essential to nisuin, it's also going to be included in the prohibition. So what emerges from the Rav's analysis is that not only is simcha ba'alma prohibited, and then you have to come onto a different reason for why nisuin is prohibited, namely lo misamna milsa, just not a good time to get married, but says the Rav, no, we can extend we can extend the scope of simcha that's included in Misha Nichnasav Matin B'Simcha to anything that has simcha at its core, even if it is a mitzvah, and therefore it would extend to the mitzvah of Nisuin. You wouldn't have to appeal to the reasoning of Lo Misamna Milsa. So that's our first two discussions, namely first the Mechayiv of Misha Nichnasav Matin B'Simcha and explaining what Matin B'Simcha really means, and number two, what types of simcha are included in this principle. I'd like to finish off by discussing the relationship between Misha Nichnasav Matin B'Simcha and Misha Nichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha. So we noted that the Gemara in Tainus parallels the two. And the question is, why does the Gemara go out of its way to parallel these two principles? Is it just for convenience? Is it just to have a mental note that you have two similar halachos during two different time periods of the year, one a decrease of simcha and one an increase of simcha? Or is there something more that lies behind this parallel? So the Ritva in Tainus and Av Chav Tasem Ed Beis, he notes that although generally we say Ein Mazel Li Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael is not subject to supernatural forces of Mazel, nonetheless, Klal Yisrael is subject to Mazel during the 2 months of Av and Adar, because Kein Nigzar Aleinu Min HaShamayim, because during these months Hashem decreed that Av would be a month of sorrow for Klal Yisrael, and Adar would be a month of joy for Klal Yisrael. And seemingly what emerges from this comment of the Ritva is that these months of Av and Adar are not like other months. They actually have a certain chalos to their character. They have an inherent character that is intrinsic to them. The month of Av is by definition a sad month. It's defined as a sad month, whereas the month of Adar is not just Adar, but rather it's defined as a month that is joyful. And in order to mark or signify the character of these months, so perhaps that's why we have a ribui simcha at the beginning of Adar and a miut of simcha at the beginning of Av. The miut of simcha signifies that what we are inaugurating, we are entering a month that is by definition, one that is sad. And we should, and our behavior should accord with its character. And so too, in contrast, when we enter the month of Adar, so we mark the month with an increase of simcha, so that our behavior accords with the character of the month, namely that it is a month of joy. And I'd like to try to corral some evidence towards this conclusion. And we'll do that based on first discuss the month of Av and then the month of Adar. So with respect to the month of Av, so the Gemara in Tainis and Av Chaf Tes Amid Beis, Talamid Amid Aleph, actually has a brisa that cites three different opinions with regard to the scope of Avel of mourning during the month of Av. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that mourning should last from Rosh Chodesh until the Tainis, until Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is of the opinion that the Avel should last throughout Shavua Shechol Bo. And Rabbi Yehuda has a striking opinion where he says that the Avel should last throughout the entire Chodesh of Av. Now, of course, we do not paskin like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. But perhaps Rabbi Yehuda's position that the Avel lasts throughout the entire month, perhaps that is relevant even for the way that we paskin. And in the following way, that even if we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that there's a formal requirement of mourning of Avel throughout the entire month of Av, perhaps that reflects nonetheless that the month of Av is at its core, does have an intrinsic character of sadness. And for us, that manifests lemaisa in Mishenichnas Av Mimatin Bisimcha. And the truth is that there may even be halachic ramifications to the entirety of the month of Av being subject to a character of sadness. And this comes up with respect to the question of Rea Mazale, of having a bad fortune and avoiding court disputes with non-Jews during the month of Av. So until when do we have that halacha that one should avoid being in court during the month of Av? So the Korban Esanel in Maseches Tainis, Perek Dalid, he says that it lasts until Tisha B'Av, and that's probably what we would have thought. After all, the morning of Tisha B'Av is increases from Shavas Rabatamos al Pi Minag, and then from Rosh Chodesh until Shavuot Shechol Bo until Tisha B'Av, and we would think that after Tisha B'Av, so that's the end of the story. However, the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Beis, based on Rabbeinu Yerucham, he extends the principle of Rea Mazaleh, of not appearing in court, throughout the entire month of Av, and he tells us that really only once Elul arrives should we then return to court. So what you see is that even if we don't pass him like Rabbi Yehuda, that Avel, that mourning and miut of simcha and decrease of simcha applies throughout all of Av, we don't hold that way. We hold that it lasts only until Tisha B'Av. But the element of mazel that the Ritva noted in order to explain this connection between Adar and Av, that applies throughout the entire month. And I think that that reflects that the month has a certain character to it, and that the idea of Mishenichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha is to signify that character and have our behavior accord with the character. And I think that this idea also applies to the month of Adar. The pasuk in the Megillah, in Megillas Esther, Perek Tes, pasuk Chav Beis, so it says v'hachudesh asher ne'apach lohem miyagun l'simcha, that the month of Adar transformed from a month of dejection to a month of joy. And Yerushalmi in Megillah, Perek Aleph, halacha Aleph, cites a position that the entirety of the month, all the way from the beginning of Rosh Chodesh until Purim, is kosher the Kriyas HaMegillah. So that's in addition to the days mentioned in the Mishnah and Megillah at the very beginning of the Masechta, even from the very beginning of the month, says the Yerushalmi. In a Shas Adchak, if you have no other way to read the Megillah, so that would be kosher. You could read the Megillah even from the beginning of the month, and this is actually recorded in Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Reish Pei Ches Seif Zayin. So here too, we see this idea that the Chodesh of Adar has the character of Purim and the joy of Purim dispersed throughout and diffused throughout the entire month. And just as we said that the Rea Mazaleh of Av applies throughout the entire month of Av according to the Magen Avraham, so we also find an opinion in the postgame that the Riboy of Simcha of Adar lasts throughout the entire month of Adar, even past Purim. Not only up until Purim, but even past Purim. And that's the opinion of the Ishel Avraham Bachach in Siman Tafresh Pei Vav Sev Beis. He's of the opinion that the Riboy Simcha of Mishenichnas Adar, Marbin B'Simcha, applies throughout the entire month of Adar. So I think that these different Makoros, when you take them all together, the picture that emerges is that Av and Adar share in common that they are two months that have intrinsic character to them, Av being one of sorrow and sadness, Adar being one of happiness and joy, and the principle of Mishenichnas Av Mimatin B'Simcha and Mishenichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha is meant to signify and mark the character of the month and have our behavior respond to that character. Just to end off on a point of Machshava, what you see from Mishenichnas Av Mimatin B'Simcha, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha is just another example of the dialectic of Simcha and Avelos. Throughout the halacha, we find different instances where simcha and avelos are tied together. The Rambam in Hilchos Avel Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph tells us, based on the Yerushalmi, that Moshe tikein shivas hamei avelos v'shivas hamei amishta. That Moshe was the one who is misakein both the 7 days of avelos of shiva and also the 7 days of yamei amishta of sheva brachos. The Rav Rosenzweig likes to quote from the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos in Mitzvos Haseh Nun Hei that the Rambam counts one mitzvah to have the chatzotzros of an Eis Tzara and the chatzotzros of a Yontif of a time of Simcha. Counts one mitzvah of chatzotzros that applies both to the more distressful time of Tzara and also to the more joyful time period of Simcha. And Rosenzweig also noted that this might be the idea of the coexistence of Matzah and Maror. Matzah symbolizing the freedom of Klal Yisrael during Pesach and Maror symbolizing the enslavement of Klal Yisrael and the need to relate to both of those experiences in reflection. And the idea really is that what we're supposed to have Simcha and Avelos tied together in the halacha, meaning that Simcha and Avelos are kind of two sides of one coin, because we're encouraged to think of one during the other. That our highs shouldn't get too high, and our lows shouldn't get too low. We're always meant to have a certain, the dialectic of Simcha and Avelos is meant to ensure an equilibrium. And when we enter Chodesh Av, so we have, we really have a dual task. On the one hand, we need to internalize the intrinsic sense of Avelos that's embedded in the month of Av as marked by Misha Nichnas Av Mimatin B'Simcha, and of course the events of Tisha B'Av that we are leading up to throughout the 90s. And we need to really, really internalize that sense of Avelos and feel it at its very core, just like the Rav explained that there's supposed to be a Kiyum B'Lev even from the time of Rosh Chodesh. But at the same time, we cannot get swallowed up in the sorrow, but rather we have to use it as an opportunity to reflect, engage in genuine tshuva, and deepen our commitment at the right time. That after we pass the period of Avelos of Tisha B'Av, that we use that Avelos towards deepening our commitment, eventually getting to Elul and the Yamim Noraim. And then we know from the Medrash in Sefer Dvarim, Parag Aleph, where the Medrash says, "Veshanu chachamim mishenichnas av mematin b'simcha, v'chol hamekabel alav evel elu hayamim zoche liros b'simcha sam. Dechsev simchu es Yerushalayim v'gilu v'kol oavea sisu itamasos kol hamis avlimba." That anyone who is mekabel upon himself, anyone who truly experiences the evel of these days of mishenichnas av mematin b'simcha, is zoche liros b'simcha sam. Again, the combination of evel and Simcha. I wish everyone a great rest of the week.